Seattle on the road, 6.5-point favorites at Philadelphia.
They can keep games close when they lose. That's what kind of worries me. I like the number 6.5, but against the Eagles, not a great record this year. In this one, though, I am going to go with Seattle, minus 6.5.
Bam, bam, bam.
Final 20 seconds. Here's Wentz. Why not? Deep ball in the end zone, and it is caught. Caught for the touchdown, Richard Rodgers. The Eagles have attempted the most two-point conversions in the NFL. And a lane opens up nicely for Miles Sanders, who strolls in for two.
Go ahead.
I stayed up to watch that whole game because I just didn't trust it. I wasn't feeling it. I really wasn't. Usually, I'll turn it off the fourth quarter, at least, if it's a late one, drags out, and I'm going to win my game. I just had a feeling. I looked. I was like, was it 5.5 or 6.5? Because I know some people had it at 5.5 when it opened. And looked at your tweet. It was actually 6.5. And as I'm watching Wentz throw the Hail Mary, I'm just like, I don't know. I had a feeling they were going to catch it. And then I'm like, okay, I'm doing the math in my head. Whatever. They're going to kick the point. I'm still going to cover by half a point. Mm-hmm. Then I don't know whether it's Wentz or was it Peterson that called that play? Because it looked like Wentz wanted to stay out and go for two. And I couldn't quite figure it out, but now I have it figured out. They had the game at 6.5.
It makes absolutely no sense to me why they would have gone for two in that situation. Now, it was highly unlikely that they were going to come back and tie the game, right? Obviously, they would have had to recover an onside kick, and they would have had to throw up another prayer. But why wouldn't you just kick the extra point? And I look, Ziggy, it is absolutely not my place or anybody else's place without some kind of evidence to suggest shenanigans. But I have a really hard time just looking at that and accepting it at face value. And I'm not here to defend you. I can tell you that, but you didn't have skin in the game. We're just having fun with the Ziggy Locks. You didn't throw $100 down on that game. I understand. You didn't throw $1,000 down on that game, but I have a really hard time watching that and believing that it's pure.
I'm telling you, I couldn't get to sleep. I didn't get to sleep till like 1 o'clock. I was online. I was watching television, watching all the highlights and everything. So did you not see the, like, 91? So the word is on the street, 91% of bets in Vegas had the Seahawks cover.
That's it.
Apparently there was a $500,000 bet on the Seahawks when at -6.5.
How do you?
So that's from BR_betting.
Okay, so the Bleacher Report _betting. Okay, so how do you think Mr. or Mrs. 500,000 is feeling this morning? Like, oh, geez,
I'm mad. I'm telling you, I'm mad.
And you didn't even actually put money down.
I'm mad. One more time.
I don't know, Mr. Brisgalov. it's only a game.
Yeah, well, let me tell you this. That's if you put, like, I was reading all the replies yesterday on Twitter. People were freaking out, and they have a right to be. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't often go down this path, but there's something stinks.
Do you not?
Why would they go for two?
Like, I've asked everybody I knew. I know I asked every single person that was up last night. Why would you do that? Every single NFL analyst, person I know, I messaged them. I say, can you please explain this one? And they said, honestly, Wentz or the coach Peterson, they had something to do with this. Doug, they got the call.
Doug Peterson is a guy who has a tendency to go for two.
They're the best in the league. They're the best in the league.
And he uses it relative to other teams at high percentage frequency. So there is that. And if you're Doug Peterson standing there on the sideline with that visor that he wears, you would say to yourself, will I bet on us in the event that we're able to score the second touchdown, converting at least one of two two-point conversions? So if we get the first one and we happen to score the touchdown, that would tie the game, and then we kick to win it. I mean, we're 3-6-1. Our division's a crap show. Like, let's just throw caution to the wind here. Or if we don't convert and we happen to score the second touchdown, then we have to get the two-point conversion to tie the game and get it to overtime. I don't know. But I think that seems... I want to believe that that's the thought process on the sideline, is the more go for it mentality. But
there's a couple things yesterday that he did that I'm telling you, forget about the betting and the going for two, whatever. I don't care about that. The play you're talking about is, yes, they're down by 11. The problem with going that for that on fourth down is that the game is over. If you don't get a touchdown, that's the problem with that play that you're talking about in the fourth. You kick the field goal, you're down by 8, and you got time for a touchdown. As soon as you don't get that, it's over. I don't understand what's going through his head. What is he thinking about?
Well, the other possibility, Zig, is that at the end of the first half, when they scored the touchdown to break their donut, their kicker shanked the extra point. So it was 14-6 at halftime instead of 14-7. I don't know. Maybe he didn't have trust in his kicker. Here's what I'll say. And I'm not, again, I want to be very clear. We can't just sit back here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, 400 miles or whatever from how far away from where the game was played and suggest shenanigans with knowledge. But the Tim Donaghy NBA stuff, from a decade and a half ago, whenever exactly that was, that leaves anything and everything open to questioning. Right? Like, there was an NBA referee involved in fixing games, a guy on the court, a guy on the floor, calling fouls, not calling fouls. It can run that deep. I don't know, but I'm also saying if somebody presented me with evidence, I would not be shocked.
I'm telling you, when I heard the number, okay, I heard a couple big bets were thrown in on Seattle, but when I heard the 91% number, then I'm just, the only problem with yesterday is how can you possibly piece that together that was fixed? I can understand if there's penalties called, phantom calls, right? I've had that before. I told you about my game when I was in Pittsburgh. And all the Steelers were on the one goal line. We're on the one.
Yes. Yeah.
First and 10. And let me tell you this. They had it called back twice after running it in and had to kick the field goal and then didn't cover. Then they actually, whoever they were playing turns the ball over. They actually get this extra 6 points they needed to cover, but it got called back. So that's three times it got called back. The reason for the third time was that the referee said it was not a lateral pass. It was a forward pass. So therefore the fumble had to get, the touchdown had to get called back. I'm sorry, but that I can give you a number of different ways on why that was fixed. This one yesterday, what are you going to say? How can you say the referees fixed that? It's impossible.
No, I'm not talking about the referees.
I'm just saying, how can you, there's no, what possible way can you say that was fixed to cover the points?
Well, no, I'm just suggesting, like, you've got a decision whether to go for one or two at the end.
Yeah.
And as you said, Carson Wentz is back and forth. I'm not saying Carson Wentz knows. I'm not saying Carson Wentz is on the take. Carson Wentz is being told. Who knows? Doug Peterson. Here's a 705 number. The Eagles coach should be fired for going for two. He has to be doing the Pete Rose. So we've got the Pete Rose.
But it looked like Wentz wanted to stay out, didn't it? I was trying to look at Wentz. It looked like Wentz wanted to stay out. Like, it was Wentz looking. You know, like, do you not feel like some quarterbacks can kind of influence their coaches where it's like they give the look? It's like when you're on the bench playing hockey, you're feeling it. You want to go on the ice. You give the coach the, hey, get me back out there. I feel like Wentz loves going for
coach ever
loves going for two.
Your coach ever fall for that from you or
no? Never. But I actually do have a funny story. A guy that would do it all the time was George LaRocque in Phoenix with Wayne coaching.
I wouldn't mess with George LaRocque.
No,
Georgie wants on the ice.
When Georgie wants ice, he gets ice.
Yeah,
but let me tell you, he would look back at Wayne, and it got to the point where it wasn't a look. It was, okay, Wayne, put us back on the ice. And the other guys on the bench, I don't even want to know what they were thinking. They must have just been shaking their head like, is this really going to happen? The part about it that's crazy is that a lot of times he would put us on, we would actually go out and have a good shift. Like, it would be a part of the game where George would recognize that he needed a little fourth line magic, and we'd go and have a good shift, or we'd score sometimes. What can anybody say?
Way to go, George.
That's what somebody can say. Way to go, George. I like that.
Honestly, that's what the guys are probably, that's the tone they probably said it in or thinking. But yeah, George was, you know, he was a guy that he would always go to Wayne and say, hey, put us back on the ice. And I feel like Wentz does that sometimes. And if I watching the game yesterday, I felt like Wentz looked over at Peterson's like, hey, let's go for two. What do I have to lose? What do you have to lose? 91% of people lost money. That's what we had to lose.
Yes. Well, some people, but I mean,
imagine $500,000 on the game, $500,000.
No,
one person
I can't imagine that because I don't have that. I don't have $500,000 available to me to just throw. So no, I mean, I can envision somebody else doing it that clearly somebody did, but I can't envision that. Not a chance.
Yeah.
Imagine throwing the value of, well, not a Toronto home these days, but the value of a
small
pretty
condo.
Nice home in most places.
Yeah.
On
gone.
A Seattle-Philadelphia Monday night football game, losing and probably, well, it rankles you a little bit, not giving too much of a crap, because if you're throwing $500K down on that football game, it means you have it and so much more.
Yeah, I'm still can't believe it happened. I literally couldn't sleep last night, and I didn't even have money.
Yeah,
on
you didn't
game.
Even have, actually have
I
money.
Mean,
on,
I can't believe it.
You were tossing and turning, worried about Silent Vic and Hayden putting together the intro to the show, knowing that they were absolutely going to replay everything you said. I do want, for the record, to throw out there that there were others who suggested that Philadelphia would lose but keep the game close. I can't remember who they are, but they ended up being correct.
You and
whoever
you,
they are.
Let's give you guys a round of applause for picking that one yesterday. Congratulations, you two. I'm happy you saw that one coming.
Now,
thank you. Thank you.
As we do the Wheel of Fortune around the NFC East, the Eagles loss, they are very definitely not in first place now. We got a couple of four-win mm-hmm. teams. Remember, you have Dallas. Hugh, who's a legit fan, has his Washington football team. And I have the New York football Giants to win the NFC East. If the playoffs started today, it would be the New York Giants. Joe Judge.
You kidding me?
Daniel Jones. No Saquon Barkley since week two.
But Jones, he pulled his hamstring, didn't he?
And he's shanked his hammy. So they, I mean, it's...
This division is just a nightmare. Can we relax with the Cowboys, though?
The Cowboys suck.
I'm one game back.
You can't talk about the Dallas Cowboys and expect it. If their defense, thing with the New York Giants and Washington to an extent, too, is you can look at their defenses and say, out of all of this mess, they've got enough of a defense that they can win this division, right? It's going to be a six. It's now going to be a six-win division. it's quite possible we're going to have the first double-digit loss division winner in NFL history.
Yeah. Oh, that's not a question now. I mean, right?
Well, unless the Giants get to 7 wins somehow, or Washington gets to 7 wins somehow.
Yeah. I just look at I'm trying to look at the Cowboys, who they have. They've got the Ravens, they've got the 49ers, who can, I'm telling you, guys are coming, they're getting healthy.
Yeah.
Guys are coming back. But look who they have. They have the Eagles, the Giants. Like, it's possible they can.
Of course it's possible, but here's the thing.
The Bengals.
The Cowboys suck. Like, you cannot make, especially with Dak out and Ezekiel Elliott carrying the ball around like it's a loaf of bread. You cannot make an argument that the Dallas Cowboys are better than anybody else in that division. Should they be better? Would they have been better if we took the four rosters on paper at the start of the season? Okay, that's fine. But that's not how it is now on December the 1st, snowing outside in Toronto, Ontario. It's not how it is.
Well, I'm not worried about it, all right? I have some confidence in Mike McCarthy, all right? He's going to come back. He's going to.
You have
he might
some
be the only one.
Hey, Mike McCarthy, how did you get hired after a year off getting fired from Green Bay? Yeah, I went to Jerry Jones for a sleepover. I went to Jerry Jones's house, had a sleepover, and got my ass hired. All right. Okay. There are better options out there. Better options.
Settle down just a little bit. Oh,
shut up, Jerry. It's too early in the morning for that.
You think Jerry just sometimes says, "Why?" Like, does Jerry ever sometimes look at himself and say,
nope.
"All right, this is getting so bad. Like, maybe it's me. Maybe I need to like step.
No.
You know,
no.
Hand this over. Maybe I shouldn't decide. Maybe I shouldn't talk after the games. I shouldn't decide who they get, who they trade for, who we sign. Let's just leave it to the professionals." No?
I'll give you the flip side of that coin. I'm worth $5 or $6 billion.
I don't
care.
Or
my franchise is worth $5 or $6 billion. I'm good. I built the Jerry World Lollapalooza down there in Arlington, Texas. In non-COVID times, they come streaming in. America's team. How about them Cowboys? Nope. I mean, nothing's going to change until he leaves this world. That would be my assessment of it now. I mean, if you can't change him now. He fired Jimmy Johnson because Jimmy Johnson had had enough of him, and that yokel Barry Switzer took over, former coach of the University of Oklahoma, and Switzer won the third of Dallas's Super Bowls in the 1990s with the roster that Jimmy Johnson built. And ever since then, Aikman retired. Irvin got knocked out of the game with the broken neck in 98 or 99. Emmett Smith got old. Ever since then, nothing, Zig. I mean, there have been some division titles and some home playoff games, but they've not. They haven't lived up to the billing. The Dallas Cowboys, and I don't like the Dallas Cowboys personally, so I hate having to say this, but, I mean, the Dallas Cowboys performing like they have over the last 25 years, that would be like the New York Yankees being mediocre in Major League Baseball for 25 years. That would be like Manchester United not being consequential in the Premier League for a quarter century.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the Dallas Cowboys, however one feels about them, they're called America's team for a reason. They got fans all over the place. They're an international brand.
I love the owner caring. I just don't like, I like him being like, when I played, I used to love when the owner would come in the room and high five everybody after a game. And I played on some of those organizations, whether it didn't matter what league it was in. I used to love that. But they were never part of the negotiation, you know, process with guys signing. They didn't have their hand in who they drafted. They never did any media availability after the game. And you kind of like when Jerry goes on and does his media hit, you're kind of, as a player, you're looking for hints and clues and, you know, hidden messages. I never had that. And that's what Jerry does. I think it affects the guys on the team. I think it puts needed pressure on the coaching staff. I think the whole coaching staff's gone.
Yeah. Mike McCarthy can't stay. They've got a, he's one and done. Now,
see ya.
If Michael Kay chiming in with a see ya, if anybody might try to redo it, to bring it back for a second year, it could be Jerry Jones. But Mike McCarthy needs to go. Mike Nolan, the defensive coordinator, I lived that experience. He was the head coach of the 49ers from 2005 till partway through the 2008 season. He hadn't been a head coach in the NFL prior to that. He hasn't been a head coach in the NFL since. That defense is dreadful. It's had some injuries, but it's absolutely brutal. You had a kind of a mutiny go on 2 or 3 weeks into the season, and that was even before Dak Prescott turned his ankle the wrong way. Players talking off the record, serving as anonymous sources to media around the Cowboys team, saying we're not ready to play. Our coaches don't have a plan. Our coaches are effectively said our coaches are morons. They're stupid. Like, how do you recover from that? And if there is a team in the NFL which revolves more around its quarterback, point it out to me. But when Dak Prescott went down, Andy Dalton's a pretty good backup to have, but when Dak Prescott went down, if there maybe was one nail left to be hammered into Dallas's coffin this year, and that was it. And it was the biggest nail. And Ezekiel Elliott, like I said, he's a fumble machine. A highly paid running back who right now is in his own head, has the yips, and is a fumble machine. It's a complete disaster.
He can't find his game. I don't know what it is, because I think he's so talented. I think he's just, it's tough. We talked about the contract he got. You can't, and it's hard to do that. You know what's funny when you hear guys in running backs and contracts is, well, how about... Their first response is, well, how about Derrick Henry? Would you give him the money? I'm like, everything.
Derrick Henry.
Take it all.
Yeah.
But you're right. They're, you know, so injury, just inconsistent play. So many things pop up. You don't use them as, you know, part of your schemes anymore. You are right. Why pay your running back when you're watching Zeke play right now? I when you see Derrick Henry, though, someone says, well, what do you...
Well, Derrick Henry's built like a linebacker, right?
Yeah.
And so he's fast and he's big. He's impossible to bring down. He is the running back version of what Cam Newton has been as a quarterback. And absolutely Ezekiel Elliott could bounce back. He's a dual threat, right? He'll run the football, but he also gets open out in the flats and he can go for yards after the catch, right? So he's a dual threat when he's on his game. But they're also, like I said, they're missing their quarterback. It hasn't gone as expected in Dallas this year.
One other thing I want to mention from the game. What exactly is Peterson doing, the coach, with Jalen Hurts, bringing him in for like one play, makes a play, catches, like makes a completion, and then pulls him? Like, leave him in for a drive. Or don't play him at all. Why would you bring your backup quarterback in for one play? Can you please explain to me what the thinking is
Jalen Hurts
around
is
that?
Well, Jalen, yeah, but Jalen Hurts, it's like what New Orleans does with Taysom Hill when Drew Brees is healthy. You bring him in as kind of a wildcat option, so, or a read option guy. So you'll have the... If the defense plays you or reacts one way, you'll hand the ball off to the running back. If it reacts another way, you'll fake the handoff, keep the ball yourself, and run. Or if it reacts a third way, you'll fake the handoff, keep the ball yourself, and look for the open receiver charging downfield.
Yeah.
So that's what that's about. It's kind of a one-off. It's a gadget play, if you will, as part of their offensive scheme.
All right. Just don't get it.
You're so mad. You're cranky this morning. I understand. You got very little sleep because you're Ziggy Locke.
Why do you have to be mad?
Somebody had the code. somebody had the code. Which NFL team fell apart the worst this year? We've talked a lot about Dallas. What about Chicago? What about Baltimore? Tampa Bay, Denver, San Francisco. We'll discuss some of that. There's now another update to the update to the update to the update of when the Ravens and Steelers will play. Jonas Schaefer of the Baltimore Sun will join us at 8:30. Shane Corson, Movember spokesperson, former Toronto Maple Leaf. He'll recap Movember and we'll talk a little hockey. Like, are we going to have a season? And I'm looking at the guest list here, 7:30. Jamie MacArthur.
Oh, baby.
Jamie MacArthur is going to join us.
Jamie Mac. Who the fuck is that guy?
Who the bleep?
Jamie Mac. Do I go Jamie Mac? Yeah.
You can call him Jamie Mac if you want. Just don't call him Jimmy. Don't call him Jimmy. Jimmy would not be happy if you called him
Mr.
Jimmy.
MacArthur.
Right. So
the father of the Scotty MacArthur. I can't wait.
He is.
This is going to be awesome.
He is my father. He is not joining us because he is my father, although because he is my father, he was an easy guest to book. From 1987 to 1997, he held a couple of different positions at the then Skydome. And given the news of the last number of days, I thought it would be fun if we went down memory lane. Some of the
I got a couple questions for him. I got one beef I gotta bring up with him. We'll talk about it later.
Sure, absolutely. And just remember, whatever beefs you have with me, I probably got them from him. He will jump into studio. We'll talk a little NHL and we'll continue to discuss the NFL teams that have surprisingly fallen apart. Feels like it's 5 a.m. in Helsinki. We're six stories underground. And I'm in need of a water bottle.
What are you saying?
Dehydration.
Of course. It's all that dancing.
So, 7:30. I can't wait. Is your dad up? Can we bring him on earlier? Like, why do I have to wait till 7:30?
Hello, Scott. I'm your father.
Dr. Evil.
If you want to throw this show off the rails, if you want to throw this show off the rails, like we lose Ziggy, any Dr. Evil drop will do it.
Yeah. Hello, Scott. I'm your father.
Oh, behave.
Scott, you just don't get it, do you?
I'm disappointed in Silent Vic that he hasn't been using that for months now.
Yeah.
He will.
Yeah, he's sitting on that one. You wanted to sit on that one.
Oh, has he? All right. Well, it's too bad he kept it till today, because I don't know if he knows this, but this is his final day on the show.
Yeah. So it's been a pleasure.
You know?
How about no, Scott, okay?
Well, there's a drop for everything, I guess, now. There's a response.
Oh, man.
Yes, there That's is.
Awesome. By the way, Ziggy, you shouldn't be rooting for this too hard, because it feels like I could be having a conversation with Dr. Evil for the rest of the show. You know, if Dr. Evil becomes my co-host here, Alex from Barrie, the Cowboys should hire Mr. Perfect to replace Dak Prescott. Rick and Mimico, to finish Scotty's point on the Cowboys, it's like the Maple Leafs not being consequential for 25 years or since 1967. Go CBJ, Rick and Mimico. So Rick and Mimico's number's just been blocked.
Wow.
That's nice. No time for that. Taking shots at our Maple Leafs in this NHL offseason. By the way, Ziggy, since you know all, when the hell are we playing hockey? We getting some hockey back at some point or what?
So, yeah, I'm not too optimistic that it's going to start on January 1st like everyone was saying.
Well, wouldn't they have to be in training camp? Like, oh, I don't know, now?
Close. Yeah.
In a week.
Close.
Yeah.
Next week. Yeah.
It would have to have. It would have to be
in the holidays too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm optimistic that they will play. The fact that it hasn't, we're not hearing anything.
They're not talking, Ziggy. That is what it sounds like.
Yeah. And some of the guys, it's been really quiet. I think it's one or the other. I think it's a really good thing or it's a really bad thing. And I'm leaning towards it's a bad thing that we're not hearing anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. But every lockout, which this is not, but every lockout has a life cycle. Do you remember Gary Bettman coming down the elevator in New York City at whatever hotel in early 2013 and getting behind a microphone and saying, that's it, we're done. We can't play. We're running out of time, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And within a week, they'd finished it all off and they ended up playing a 48-game season, right?
Another way to look at it, I know originally we had, you know, when Stewie and Bourne were on, I said, well, maybe the NHL just wanted to get the season back, and then they knew they were going to have to renegotiate at some point and slowly do it a little bit at a time, right? That's kind of one theory we threw out. What if the NHL at this point said, you know what? We were hoping that some fans would be allowed back in. If we have to go to 48 games and fans aren't allowed in, and the players now, we have to pay them a full salary, what if the NHL just doesn't work for them? What if this is the NHL's way to get out of playing the season? Hey, we went back to the players. Oh, we wanted some extra concessions. What do you think?
Do you honestly think that league,
that is such
after
a bad
everything
look.
In the last 25 years, the lockout of 94-95, the full season lost in 04-05, the half season of 12-13 with another lockout, that league thinks it's in its best interest. I'm not talking about certain individual owners who run teams in bad markets that gush money. I'm not talking about them as individuals. I'm talking about the league from an existential perspective in the middle of a bloody pandemic when the NFL, as full of flaws, and there are more right now than there have been at any point in the NFL season, the NFL, Major League Baseball figured out a shortened season, and they had their issues with the players' union and vice versa leading up to that. And the NBA is on track to, I mean, some of the Raptors are flying south today to start training camp in is it?
Tampa.
Florida?
Which is in.
Yeah. Florida. Yeah. We love Florida.
Yeah. All the other leagues are playing.
Yeah. So, like I was saying,
how can the NHL not?
A terrible, terrible look, Zig. And absolutely, Zig, I totally agree with you. There probably are some owners, let's just say, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for them if there was no season.
Okay, but screw them.
But how could they possibly opt out when, you're right, when the NBA is doing it, when baseball had its season, and when the NFL, you know, keep stumbling toward the finish line. The NFL will finish its season and there will be a Super Bowl. I don't know how many players are going to be eligible to play in it, but there are going to be some. So the NHL can't. Or are they waiting? Do they know, Ziggy? Do you think that they know they're not going to start January 1st? They understand that and they've already kind of decided on a 48-game schedule. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, it's going to be 48 to 60 at this point. 60 is getting.
Do they get 60 in? Wow.
Yeah, if they want to finish before, they want to finish before the Olympics. I mean, it's going to be almost impossible to play 60. But yeah, there no All-Star game, no 5-day break. You play back to backs. You play in your one division, right? Yeah, they have the four divisions, three through the U.S. and the one Canadian. They can make it happen. Yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't go to a prorated salary. I told you this. I'm all for the players making every dollar they can make, but whatever they negotiated back in July, I just have a hard time believing they don't go back to the prorated salary. Yeah, and another way to look at it is maybe it's not in their best interest to put the season on with no fans. You got to pay the players their full salary. There's so you have no idea what's going to happen with COVID and the pandemic. Like it could look what's happening in the NFL right now. Look what's happening. What if this happens in the NHL? Like this is, it would be an absolute disaster. Then you start putting the season on hold for a week or 2 weeks. It's just, it's a scenario.
Well, that's the conversation you have to,
not
but that's a
real,
conversation but, you have to have, Ziggy. Do you want to try to push ahead with this understanding that there are going to be positive tests, or do you shut it all down and run the risk of completely falling away in the public consciousness?
Yeah.
And I hate minimizing the element of the virus here, because it is so contagious and it is so problematic, and it kills some people and it messes with others who have survived significantly. I'm not here to minimize that, and I don't want to make it sound like positive tests are just the price of doing business and owe some collateral damage. But
callously, that's kind of the way it is. Like, that's what the NFL has adopted. That's their philosophy right now.
Like, are you guys okay with, you know, giving sports leagues these special privileges where they can kind of go and do whatever they want while the rest of the public doesn't?
No.
What side of the fence are you on there? Because I feel like these leagues need some kind of, you know, special privilege where they're going to be allowed to do things that everybody else is not.
Ooh, that'd be a tough sell.
Here's the difference. Your question, Ziggy, is specifically about the National Hockey League. Because there are no Canadian teams in the NFL. The Toronto Blue Jays have been denied the ability to play in Toronto last season. The Toronto Raptors are not allowed to train nor to begin this season. And it's quite possible, depending on how the vaccine plays out, or the vaccines play out, that they won't play any of this coming season in Toronto. So your question is specifically about the NHL because it has 7 Canadian-based teams. And my answer is no, I don't think that any special privileges should be given to the NHL, because I think there is a made in the NHL solution, and that is the 7 Canadian teams form a division and stay within that division for the regular season. And then if you get to the playoffs and you start to go outside of said division, i.e. you start to travel to the United States, you then, well, A, you're in the United States, so you go by their rules or their jurisdictional rules, or B, if there is some cross-border play, you got a bubble. You got a quarantine.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, Hugh. I'll give one for you. You tell me this. What do you do if you're the NHL and you're worried that once the season starts, the Canadian government can even shut down province to province travel? Like, what happens if they do that? Then what do you do?
Yeah, because,
like, say you start the season and Toronto can't go and play Montreal. Well, Toronto can't go to the West Coast.
Well, I think that if there's going to be any kind of concession made, and I agree with Scotty that the whole cross-border thing, that's a non-issue or non-starter for me. But I think if there's any room for concession, Ziggy, I think it's there within the Canadian bubble, I guess if you want to call it, that teams are allowed to travel to one another's city. I think that's the only way you make it happen, or else you don't have a season.
I mean, I know the Maritimes have more or less walled themselves off.
Yeah. But right? There's no Maritime team. So, okay.
So that doesn't matter.
That takes care of that.
And I guess my response to that question, Ziggy, would be this, which is, if interprovincial travel has not been shut down now with where this virus is in Southern Ontario, in parts of Alberta, parts of British Columbia, Manitoba's got crazy numbers relative to anything they've experienced over the last 9 or 10 months. If that hasn't been shut down now, I don't know if it will be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So that's my one question that I haven't heard anyone talk about. All I've heard is, okay, we're just going to do a Canadian division. And I'm saying, whoa, whoa, whoa. How do we even know that's going to be possible?
Here's another.
And if they shut down that, yeah.
I was going to say, here's another question, and I don't know the answer to this. So what's happening with the AHL, and if there are a bunch of positive cases on a team, how do they get guys to replace them?
Yeah, so what they're going to do is they're going to carry an extended roster. So you'd have like
maybe
four or five
players.
Yeah. Something like that. Something similar. You know, MLB, they carried a bigger roster this year.
And rosters. So they're hoping
something like that.
They're hoping that they don't get maybe four or five cases at a time.
Yeah, wow. That's all you can do, right?
Yeah, it's a
lot of teams. Well, a lot of teams aren't going to bring their AHL team to Canada, I heard. So whoever Edmonton, their AHL team's in California, so they're not going to do it.
Chris from Kitchener, the NHL wants this season to happen because it's in the last year of its U.S. TV deal, and they need that deal to be completed so they can negotiate a new one. Fair point on that as well. Should we dial it up now? 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. We've got $100 in Untuckit gift cards to attempt to give away. It's December the 1st. Advent is underway. Hugh, have you opened up that first day on the calendar and had that piece of chocolate that tastes like plastic?
Well, huh? I had the chocolate.
Yeah? Did it taste like plastic?
There's no calendar, but yeah.
No calendar?
it tastes like oily plastic. Exactly.
Yeah, it tastes very much like the inside of a water bottle, but it's tradition, man. Kick off Advent with a little Untuckit. We got $100 in gift cards to give away. Three true or false questions when we play All or Nothing. We want you to be the contestant. Dial now. We play next.
It's time to play All or Nothing with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I was reminded that we did not have a winner yesterday, so it is not $100. It is $200 in Untuckit gift cards that we will give away today, we hope. As we play All or Nothing, three true or false questions, get them all right or get them all wrong, and you win. So if you get the first one wrong, don't hang up. Just get numbers 2 and 3 intentionally wrong. Let's go to Hockley Valley for Mike. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Good luck to you. Ziggy has question number one.
Ziggy.
What's up, buddy?
Couple of Mikes.
Michael? Mike.
Yeah. <that's>
All right. Mike in Hockley Valley, we got to get you focused, pal. We can't screw with it. We got to win this guy some gift cards. Here we go.
Okay. In a recent piece for ESPN, Peyton Manning spoke with Marshawn Lynch, who is also known as his nickname, Beast Mode. True or false?
False.
It's actually true. Beast mode.
Okay, so Mike, it's all right. You gotta get the next two wrong. So whatever you think is correct, answer the opposite. Hugh's got question two.
All right.
Okay, Mike, NBA training camps open up today. The odds are out, and an LA team is favored to win the NBA championship this year, but it is not the Lakers. It's the Clippers. Is that true or is that false?
True.
That's good.
That's good.
That's good.
Yeah, Lakers are favored. About 2.5 to 1.
Okay. Mike.
Yes.
You've got to get this wrong. Do you know your Toronto Blue Jays history?
Not bad. Not too badly, yeah.
Okay. Well, we have a guest who happens also to be my father. Coming on to discuss the history of Skydome at 7:30. The Blue Jays started playing baseball in Skydome in 1989, but for the first couple of months of that 1989 season, they played home games still at Exhibition Stadium. Is that true or is that false? You want to get it wrong.
Okay, I remember problems with the dome or the lid, so I'll say true, false.
Good man.
Well played.
Yeah. I'm always happy. I talk it through.
Yeah, take your time.
Talk it through, and Mike did. He had, there were problems, da-da-da-da. Okay, they started at Exhibition Stadium. That makes it true. I got to get it wrong. It's false. He got it. $200 in Nantucket gift cards for Mike in Hockley Valley. Congratulations. Good with that. Like it. Raptors start training camp down in Tampa area today.
Florida. We love Florida.
Stop it.
The NFL. Well, we've talked a lot about the Monday Nighter and that weird cover at the end of the football game. We've also got the Ravens and Steelers pushed back again. We've got a positive drug test or two with the Houston Texans. What a disaster their season has been. And the very latest on the NHL is it's now December 1st, and we still have no word on when a season may begin. That's all ahead. You know, I'm in a state of paralysis until you turn your FaceTime back on, because I don't know if you're there or not.
I was going to message Silent Vic and tell him to turn the bass down a little. I like the tune, but he's got to turn the bass down just a little. You know what I need? I need a better system at home. I need one of those speakers that, you know, the Bluetooth ones that you can play right from your phone. I know I'm sounding dating myself now, but I don't have like one of those.
I need one of them. Need one of them iPods.
Yeah, that's me.
Get me an iPod. Hey, Ziggy, we all have Spotify accounts now. I got an iPod.
I'm sticking to my iTunes. I got my iPhone still. I got my iTunes, all my tunes from.
Be real. When's the last time you spun a CD? Last week?
A CD? No, but I do have all my CDs still. Should I throw
those
out?
There was something about having them stacked, you know, you could buy shelving, right? And having your CDs and, I mean, if you happen to be a reader, having your books there, it looked like you'd made something of yourself. Look at all the music I like. Look at all the books that I've allegedly read. I'm a busy person. There was something about that shelving. There's no point in now.
No, there was actually like CD case shelves. Yeah, not just having nice shelves. There was like, you would go to whatever electronics store, you'd have all the CDs out, and you would go and you'd buy this. They were made specifically for the CDs. I used to put mine in a folder though. Like I never had any DVD cases. Whatever I would buy, they would go into one of those books, right?
Yeah, like in one of those binders where you'd flip the plastic covers.
It's just, why keep the cases? You know what I mean? Why keep them? Really? Do you really need the cases with the CDs and the DVDs in them? No,
well,
you don't.
I don't
That's
know.
That's rhetorical. I mean, yeah, it's
probably a personal preference. Yeah.
But
I mean, those binders were perfect. Those binders you could flip through were perfect for road trips, right? Because then you had all your CDs right there. You didn't have clanking around with all the plastic covers and all of that. I totally understand.
I'm into minimalizing everything. You know what I mean? Like,
well, this is the era for you, pal. You Spotify count on your smartphone and you can read books on a Kindle now. There's no need for the hardcovers or paperbacks or anything. It's just all right there on your machine.
No, that's one area. I mean, I do have the electronic books where I read them on an iPad, but the physical books is just, I can't do away with that just yet. I don't know where you stand on that, but I need the hard copy book. Just if I'm on, you know, in the backyard reading, you know, if you're traveling, whatever, I need the hard copy book.
Need that hardcover in your hand. Okay.
Absolutely.
I get it. By the way, and I don't know what it is with you Scarberians and just calling people
out. We stick together.
How do you, this goes back to the trivia at the end of last hour. How do you not know who Beast Mode is and he still won All or Nothing? Graham and Scarborough, Victoria Park, and Lawrence. So now he's now that's this is what you've created. We're getting coordinates now for our Scarborough listeners.
Because there's different areas. I respect that. There's different regions and different boroughs in Scarborough, and I totally get it. Some people from Agent Court don't want to be associated with, you know, some people from the beaches or from, you know, West Hill, like West Hill. That's there's different Malvern. They're all different. Malvern, Agent Court. We like each other.
Have you ever properly identified yourself where you fall on the Scarborough spectrum?
I've not told. There's been clues on the show that I've thrown out
well,
there.
Well, Ziggy, I think you grew up south of a particular highway and you live north of a particular highway now. Am I correct? Or am I wrong?
Not going to say whether you're correct or not. I'm just going to say I've let out hints on where I live. And if you pay attention, you would actually know within a 2 kilometer radius of where I'm at. So
if Doris ever gets a Twitter account, she's probably leak coordinates.
I want Doris to call in. We should have Doris on. Just, you know, bury the hatchet.
Just slip a note in her mailbox saying, call this number at 7:30 tomorrow morning, and it'll be the call-in line that Hayden or Vic will pick up.
Doris definitely doesn't have a cell phone. I'd be shocked if she even had a telephone in her place. I'm not kidding.
No
telephone in Doris's house.
Do you and Doris exchange happy holiday greetings? Do you give a happy holidays nod to each other but not say any words? Like, what's the nature of the... Is the Cold War so frigid that there's not even an acknowledgement at what is supposed to be the happiest time of the year?
We actually haven't done a Doris update, so we might as well just do it right now.
Did something happen?
Well, I had Doris actually. I don't think I've talked about this since it happened, and she actually came by. I'm pretty sure somebody told her that I must be talking about some neighbor Doris.
Are you kidding?
There isn't a Doris. I'm pretty sure because she came back. She mentioned the radio show and knows about it. She didn't bring up anything specific from the show, but you know, you just get that feeling. So she came and she's like, you know what? I had a couple hard years. Like, she really gave me her whole story and said, I've been, you know, I haven't been very nice. Like, she came and admitted, like, just pretty much apologized for the way she was acting. And I accepted. I said, you know what? I understand that. And then it was all great and rosy for 2-3 weeks. It was great. Like, I didn't, like, it was perfect.
Oh, was there a heel turn? Is there a heel turn at the end of this story, though?
Of course there's a heel turn.
There's a heel turn. Oh, my God. We've got a Doris heel turn. She went babyface for like a month, and then she turned heel.
So since everything was all good, we were waving, saying hi, everything was good. You know, I like your mulch. Oh, I love your Japanese maples.
There really is no greater compliment than when somebody tells you they like your mulch. We all wait for somebody to tell us that.
Yeah, we're, you know, complimenting each other's hostas and, you know,
Your what?
You know, hostas? It's a plant. It's okay. We'll discuss plants another day.
Sure.
So I had the arborist, which is, they take care of trees.
I do know that. An arborist is a tree person.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I had an arborist come by. I had to cut a couple trees down. And I just wanted her, I wanted her blessing. I wanted Doris's blessing. Now that everything's good, well, there's a couple trees on the property line that you should ask. Once they're on your side, you don't technically need to ask. You can just take them down. But I figured, you know what? This one's on her side. It's hanging on mine. I want to cut it down. I was moving a shed. So I brought her. I went over. She didn't look in a good mood. I was like, okay, maybe she's having a bad day. She comes in and she's like, no to any of this. You're not allowed to cut anything down. And I was like, well, is everything all right? Like, what's the issue? And she's like, you're cutting all the trees down. I never know what's going on. So she's losing it on me cutting trees, which I've never cut a tree in years it's been. And then walked me further into her backyard and pointed to a dead tree that's been dead for a long time and said, you had an arborist come back here and cut down the top of this tree and it killed my tree. And I said, the last time an arborist came to the house was 12 years ago. She said, yep, 12 years. And now it's dead. And walked away from me. And that was it. So things are not good in Scarborough.
Doris doesn't forget.
She's mad.
Doris doesn't forget.
It was like a...
Treegate. Treegate is from 2008, Ziggy. Treegate is from 2008, yeah. And she's holding on to it.
She held on to it. I don't know what happened.
It's that old saying, Ziggy. The babyface turn. I mean, Vince McMahon went babyface for 2 months in 1999 and turned out he was fooling Steve Austin all along. When somebody shows you who they are the first time, believe them. That's one of the great phrases.
You can accept an apology,
but...
I thought things were good and they just weren't. And I'm disappointed now. It's cold. It's gone cold. It's the Cold War is back on.
Yeah. The snow today. It's just the Earth's temperature is cooling due to the frost.
I knew things were making a turn when your neighbor takes out one of those, you know, the handheld blowers, and they blow all their leaves
on your side of the...
When I saw that, I knew something was kind of up because her friend that she lives with is just... He's been going to town. Every single leaf that is on their property will end up on my front yard.
Okay. Well, I think the next time Tyson fights Roy Jones or Jake Paul takes on Conor McGregor, I think you and Doris's boyfriend should be on the undercard. There we go. I feel bad for him
though. He's got to live with Doris.
Well, you know, yeah, but he's also made the decision. Maybe she's got to live with him. I mean, he's making the conscious decision. Maybe he's not all there. Who knows?
Why nobody care about my ass?
Thank you, Mike. And by that I mean Tyson, not Ziggy. So in 15 minutes, the countdown is on. My dad is a legitimate guest. We are talking about the history of Skydome. And
are we going through the whole history?
Oh, yeah. But minute by minute.
Like, okay, because there was something that happened in 1996. I didn't know if that was under his
jurisdiction.
Did he cover that?
Oh, yeah. He was there under his jurisdiction. Yes.
Okay, maybe. I don't know if we're going to go there or not, but I'm going
to
bring up everything.
You can't do that to the listener. You can't do that to me. We got to know what happened in 1996.
You just look up 1996. Just go online and look at
1996. Pat Hickin won the Cy Young Award in 1996.
Okay, I'll give you some clues. It involved the hotel.
Oh. How old were you? You were 50. Oh, that. Oh, the lovemaking. Is that what you're talking about? Was that 1996? I would have had that way earlier than that. I thought that happened really early. You mean the couple overlooking the field who were making a baby?
I think it happened a couple times, did it not?
Yeah, like that feels like it happened really early on.
Yeah, I think it happened a couple times.
But maybe it happened again in 1996. Yeah, one of the rooms overlooking the field.
I just had a message yesterday. Somebody said, are you guys discussing the Skydome, the history? I was like, yeah, Scotty's dad's coming. He's coming on. And they said, well, this is like pretty funny. Maybe you should bring it up. I'm like, I don't think so. So anyways, I think there was like an episode in 96. And I'm trying to pull up the other year that
you're Googling,
I think you're right.
We need to know what you're Googling. Are you Googling Skydome sex hotel? Are those the three words?
I'm just putting in Skydome news. There you go.
Skydome news. Yes. It's made no other
and
news.
For some reason, my laptop is frozen.
Doris has cut your Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Maybe this is a big article to pull up. Maybe that's why my computer is frozen now.
But I mean, I think there's been a lot of reminiscing about the dome over the last few days since the news came down in the Globe and Mail on Friday morning that we're on the track now toward a brand new baseball stadium. And I would say it's a pretty safe bet that we're at least a half a decade away from that stadium opening. I mean, there are still hurdles to clear before shovels are in the ground. Mm-hmm. And it's not even clear, Ziggy, exactly how this is all going to play out. We've had Shai Davidi and Stephen Brunn on the program, and there's been discussion of this throughout the day on all of the shows here on the station. Like, what is this going to look like? Are they going to partially bring SkyDome down and construct on the north side of it? Are the Jays going to simply play their days out in SkyDome while the stadium is built on another parcel of land elsewhere in the city? Maybe the Portlands are a good option, like whatever. I think it's a really exciting time, but I think it's also a time to reflect at what a technological marvel the SkyDome was when it opened. And one of the things that tends to happen when you reach our age is you forget that not everybody remembers, because a significant chunk of the population wasn't alive yet or was very little when SkyDome opened. And it mm-hmm. was a massive thing when that stadium came to be. And my dad, who will join us at 7:30, actually started working for SkyDome 2 years before it opened in 1987. And I have memories of the first two SkyDome employee Christmas parties in December of 1987 and 1988. The roof wasn't finished. Obviously, there were no seats in the mm-hmm. stadium. It was still a wide open shell. A lot more progress had been made by the end of 88, obviously, than the end of 87. But we were all standing there, families of employees bundled up, and it was just amazing to look up, and you could see the CN Tower and the construct of this stadium before it was ever fully formed. I got great memories as a kid of that.
Do you know what I hear the most of when all this news started to come last week? The most I've heard of is it's such a big part of the Toronto skyline. I would hate for it to be gone. And that brings me back to some of the reports, right? On, okay, they want to keep part of the structure, right? Maybe they want to keep part of the lid, in quotations, part of the dome on the lake side, and you just shorten the outfield. You know what I mean? Have some kind of configuration where you keep the original kind of the top of Rogers Center, so you don't really mess with the skyline, or you make some smaller version of it where it's covering the infield. And that way, if it rains or something, at least that part's covered. And the outfield, if it gets wet, it gets wet. It doesn't really matter, right?
Yeah, I just think, Ziggy, it's really important that there be a retractable roof. I want open-air baseball, but I don't want open-air baseball on April the 5th. It's not mm-hmm. comfortable. We're both old enough that we have some very early memories of our youth going down to Exhibition Stadium. You can go to BMO to watch a Toronto FC game in March when their season's kicking off. I was fortunate enough to be at the MLS Cup playoff games and then the MLS Cup itself in early December, almost exactly about 3 years ago right now when they beat Seattle. It is chilly, right? So
yeah.
I think there are ways to do it. The Milwaukee Brewers offer a really good example. They've got a great ballpark, Miller Park. And just for the record, I want you to remember that I complimented something in Milwaukee. I complimented something in Wisconsin.
It's not a bad city.
Put that down. I'm growing as a human being. But there are a lot of places. What I don't want them to do, as gorgeous as now T-Mobile, formerly Safeco Field, is in Seattle, is have the roof, but have it open air. Because Seattle in April is frigid. And so that cold air, you're covered by the roof. So if it's raining, you're not getting wet, but you're still freezing. I think there's a way mm-hmm. to climate control it. And then when the weather gets nice in early to mid-May, you can have it open on any nice day from then until the end of September, as we've had it at SkyDome Rogers Center. I think that's what they've got to do. And if they can, as I say, use the glass around the sides to let the natural light in, daytime, nighttime, get a sense of the city's skyline outside of just the CN Tower as we're taking in a ball game, I think it'd be incredible.
Yeah. So that's the one option, redo it there. I still think putting in one of those new age, you know, fun ballparks, the ones everyone's building in the U.S., that Pittsburgh open. I'm okay with the open concept. I know in April it's going to be brutal, but something all in the water, you know, Stephen Brent was on talking about it, how, you know, once they put in the public transportation outside the city, right? I've heard a couple different sites they might use, but yeah, and then where are they going to play, right? I mean, if they're just going to redo SkyDome, Rogers Center, are they going to play there while the construction's going on? Like, it's confusing, right?
Yeah, well,
if that's going to be the case.
But remember, give you two examples. The Cincinnati Reds continued to play at what was Riverfront, then Synergy Field, as their new ballpark was being constructed on the other side of it, right on, appropriately named, the Riverfront in Cincinnati, and the formerly bowl-shaped stadium was more a horseshoe because they'd opened it up in the outfield to help facilitate some of that construction. That continued. And the then California or Anaheim Angels, when the Los Angeles Rams left for St. Louis, that Angels stadium is now totally reconstructed into a baseball-only park. It used to be multi-purpose, and the Angels continued to play there through the construction. So it is possible. It's not ideal, but it is possible.
Just got a message. It was two incidents, but the SkyDome, 1990 and 96.
Who the hell do you know who is listening at this hour who has the history of public sex in SkyDome hotel rooms? These are the people you know. Those people and Doris.
I don't even really know them. Life. I don't know them. I'm not going to confirm or deny.
They're very good. If they don't know you, they know Ben Ackerton, your good buddy from the baseball group chat. Shane Corson and Jonas Schaefer at 8:30 of the Baltimore Sun on the Ravens situation. They're in a full-on outbreak. And that game with the Steelers is now to be played at 3:40 in the afternoon tomorrow. It will be on NBC, as it was to be on U.S. Thanksgiving Thursday last week. The reason for the weird game time, and you heard this in Hugh's top of the hour update, is that NBC is committed to broadcasting the tree lighting ceremony in New York City tomorrow night. So the football game will be played, and then the holiday tree, Christmas tree, will be lit in New York City, and NBC will broadcast that. And up next, he is my dad, but he is also the former CFO and later former president of SkyDome. We'll take a walk down memory lane, the early days of the Dome, with my dad, Jamie MacArthur, next. Silent Vic hits the nail on the head.
Scotty's nervous. I can tell.
No, not at all. Bringing one of my parents onto the show with the Beatles is absolutely the way to do it. I'm not nervous about talking to my dad. I've done that a lot in my life, Ziggy. I'm nervous about what you've got planned that I don't know about. That's what I'm worried. You're a schemer. Doris is proving it.
Is Jamie on the line right now?
Oh, he's on the line. Morning.
Is he on? Mr. MacArthur.
Jamie MacArthur is here, former CFO and president of SkyDome, and yes, my dad. Hello,
Scotty's been Scotty's been like giddy all morning. He's been laughing. We've got his laugh going. Has he been laughing? That he's been laughing like that all morning. He's so excited, and we're happy to have you on.
Well, I got to say that the thing that occurred to me having listened to the show over the last half hour is what a fine man that Hugh Burrow is.
Oh, God. And he is not in studio to defend himself.
We will not. God. Oh, that's a shame.
Hugh is a good man, though. He went down. He did a coffee run. I love it. He is a good man. Let's get right into the old Sky Dome memories, Dad. So take us back to when you began at Sky Dome. And we would think, well, June of 1989 is when the opening night party hosted by Alan Thicke took place. Two nights later, the Blue Jays' first game. But you started there long before that.
Yeah, I started in the...
Before you answer, I just had to run in and say thank you very much, sir. I've always been a big fan of yours. You're obviously a handsome and intelligent man as well. Thank you.
Well, I don't know quite what to say about that other than I may have to reconsider my previous comment. Having said that, I started in the fall of 87, which turned out to be about a year and a half before opening. But the original opening was to be for the start of the 89 season. And construction had never been hotter than 1988 in Toronto. And the workers went on an 8 or 9 week strike to use all their leverage, and so the opening date moved to June 3rd, unfortunately. But it was a little more than a hole in the ground when we started. And one thing that I think is interesting is that in fact at that point there were 12 employees working. For the Crown Corporation building the Sky Dome. There weren't dozens, there weren't hundreds, there were 12. And that small group made it very easy to get things coordinated, communicated, and the like. And what you have is any number of architects, engineers, et cetera, that you bring on to consult to you with the Ellis Dons, et cetera, of the world who are doing the actual building. So it was a small team, very energetic, very young, and we worked hard, but we loved what we were doing.
So I remember when it was, I was obviously really young, but the whole idea of, a retractable roof coming to Toronto, it was like, it's one of those things you as a child, like, what stands out? I think the Sky Dome was one of those times, growing up in the city. Whose kind of idea was behind that? And was it like, well, we don't know if it's possible in Montreal, it wasn't a success, I guess, the fact that it kept breaking down. I remember that a lot growing up. Whose kind of idea and who kind of put that to the forefront?
Well, the idea of a baseball stadium had been around for quite a while once the Blue Jays arrived. And to be fair to the X, it's the stadium that was there. They made some adjustments to it. And without it, we wouldn't have had Major League Baseball. So God bless the X for that. But in 1982, Grey Cup game in Toronto, the Argos hadn't been in the Grey Cup for 30 years. And the weather was unbelievable. Rain, wind. If it wasn't the Grey Cup, they might not have played the game. And at that point, city leaders got together and said, we got to do something. And what came out was that they wouldn't just build a sports stadium. It had to be a multi-purpose facility. And with the weather, that tied in with we need a roof, but for baseball, we need to have the roof open. And the idea was put out to a number of groups and come back with your ideas. And two brilliant guys, architect Rod Robbie and engineer Mike Allen, and I believe I've seen the actual envelope where they sketched out what ended up being the roof and working as they had designed it in the restaurant that day. And kind of it proceeded from there. And it became a much bigger facility than originally planned. Originally, it was really just a ballpark. There was no hotel. There was no fitness club. There wasn't retail. There wasn't office space. There wasn't 160 skyboxes. There was, I think, 40, et cetera, et cetera. So it became a whole different facility and one that brought great recognition to the city around the world.
Jamie MacArthur is our guest. Yes, he is my dad. He is also the former CFO and later president of Skydome from 1987 to 1997. And you're listening to Lead Off, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Skydome opens in June of 1989, and it opens to great fanfare. The Toronto Blue Jays, after a terrible start on the field to that season, have started to win some games. And as we know, they would go on to win the American League East. And, Dad, they would make the playoffs in four of the next 5 years, 89, 91, 92, 93, the two World Series years, of course. We are all familiar with those and have great memories. So Skydome opens to great fanfare. I remember, like, there were T-shirts, there were hats. Domer, the turtle, became as popular a mascot as BJ Birdie, the Blue Jays mascot. I mean, these were really heady times in our city. We were proud of this stadium. We bragged about this stadium. And the reason I bring it up is because not long after Camden Yards and other more modern ballparks that offered nostalgia would come along, and Skydome seemed to be, I don't want to say it was mocked, but the view of Skydome changed as a result of that. And I think so sometimes we forget that when it opened, it was a massive, massive deal.
It was a huge deal. There's no question about that. And I mentioned earlier worldwide interest. We'd be in meetings with folks from Taiwan and South Korea and arenas from Europe, et cetera, wanting to know what we did, how we did it, how we financed it, et cetera, et cetera. So it really was a global event in its own way. But the other ballparks you refer to, of course, were baseball only. And so that was not going to be possible in Toronto. The multipurpose was required as a given. And having said that, from a baseball point of view, people may forget that the Blue Jays likely would not have won their World Series without Skydome, because they were able to look forward and see the revenue increases that was going to come to them. And they ended up in those early 90 years with the highest payroll in baseball. Hard to imagine these days as we see the Yankees, Dodgers, et cetera, spending money. But the Blue Jays were the highest spenders, and I think it was in the mid-40s that they spent. Another number that's hard to imagine, unless you're the Tampa Bay Rays, I guess. And so the comparison was a natural one, but really was not an apples-to-apples comparison, to be fair. And all the other events, and I know you guys were down at some of the concerts and the like, but also the WrestleManias. And the religious gatherings we held, and just a whole range of people brought to the city that may well otherwise not have come, and further burnish the reputation of the city as well as Skydome.
Were you able to enjoy the Skydome for what it was and like the events they had there? I feel like it would be tough in your position professionally to, kind of enjoy it and, bring the family out, extended family and friends when, you have this obligation to, manage and take care of something. It's kind of tough to, enjoy the personal side of something when you're so vested in professionally.
It's a good point, Ziggy. I mean, it's a great business. It's a fun business, but it's a relentless business. Events are going on most days of the year, certainly on weekends, certainly into the nights. And so, frankly, the ability to have the family come into some of the events was a real benefit, because I recall thinking, well, at least they're not just sitting home alone and I'm in here. And I'd get to visit and the like. And then they saw events that they were all happy to see. So from that point of view, it did work well. I just want to add one comment earlier. We always said that in terms of a stadium, the Sky Dome will be considered a terrific stadium as long as the Blue Jays keep winning. The Argos, and we know how that ended with the Argos, but if people aren't in Sky Dome because they don't want to see something, it's hard to call it a great stadium. But if you were at the 89 Grey Cup, one of the great games ever in CFL history, Saskatchewan over Hamblin, I think 44-41, the place was sold out. The crowd was, as you can imagine, Grey Cup crowd into it. It was a fantastic event. So there's that perception that comes with success and a full house that makes a difference also.
Absolutely. I mean, you just got to go back to the bat flip game, Jose Bautista 2015. I mean, I thought the stadium was going to implode when Texas scored in the top of the seventh and in that weird way. And then Jose's bat flip, the place was quite literally shaking. With Jamie MacArthur, my dad, and the former CFO and president of Skydome on leadoff, you need to tell the American Bowl story. So the Skydome hosted a couple of NFL preseason games in the mid-90s. The Dallas Cowboys were involved in one. You had the opportunity to show Jerry Jones, the Cowboys owner, his first glimpse of Skydome. And I think, Dad, not that we've got Jerry sitting beside us to confirm it, but I think you believe that his impression of Skydome that day helped to inform some of the decisions he made in getting Jerry World constructed.
Yes, I remember pretty clearly, Scott. I had to meet Jerry and Troy Aikman at the airport and bring them to Skydome. And we entered by the hotel and were walking along that lower level box level, went in to what was then the Argonaut press box. And he looked out and turned to Troy Aikman and said, "I have never seen anything like this." And Troy agreed. And he just kind of stared and said, "Wow." And then we wandered off down the hall to a luncheon that was having. And I've never really forgotten that reaction. And then every time I see Jerry World on TV, I think the kernel of that idea, not that he didn't always want a new stadium, but there are Skydome aspects to that stadium as I look at it that I think he may have picked up when he was here. That was in 95.
What would you say to someone who presents the narrative that Skydome was a financial sinkhole to the public coffers?
Well, I wouldn't agree with it. I think it's one of the best investments the city of Toronto ever made. City of Toronto contributed $30 million to the construction of Skydome. And from that, one-sixth of the cost, almost 20% of the cost, was work for the city. Spadina Avenue, south of Front, and the pumping station, which dated back, as I recall, to the 1800s, which borders on Skydome property, was replaced. And in aggregate, those expenditures were $100 million. So way ahead of the game. Then one of the beliefs about Skydome, which has come true, is the development of the area, and then more generally that area west of downtown. And the taxes generated out of that, especially these days, has more than made up for any concerns about that initial contribution. So I feel that the city has made out very well with Skydome and continues to, but at the same time, maybe it is time for a new baseball-only stadium. And I would say that as fond as I am of Skydome. The one thing I question, because it was a key for Skydome, was the access by GO Train and Subway. And that was a tremendous boost for people coming down. And depending where they put it down by the water, I'm just not sure how access will work, but I have no doubt that they'll figure it out.
Would you keep it the same seating size, or would you go with something more, you know, boutique, smaller, put something on the water?
Typically in baseball, the size should be more mid to upper 30,000. I would say there's in terms of the quaintness, if that's the right word, of the ballpark, but also the fact that scarcity of tickets is a big deal, and more so I think in baseball than other sports. Once fans have the feeling that they don't have to buy season tickets to be able to get to a game, that they can decide the week before or the day of they go and go, then the ticket sales drop significantly. So scarcity is an important factor in the economics of the sport, I would say. And the Sky Dome was also built for football. And there was a talk, of course, about the NFL and people wanting the NFL come to Toronto, et cetera. There was a feeling out there at the time that a stadium had to hold at least 60,000 people, which Sky Dome didn't, to even be considered for the NFL. But in fact, in talk to the NFL, it was really, no, it's the revenue potential of a building that we care about. We're not so fussed if the seating isn't quite up to 60,000. So, but from a baseball point of view, we're not building it for the NFL, so we don't need the bigger facility.
All right, last one for you on a personal note. Now, we only have 30 seconds, so no deep dive analysis. This is the test of your fandom. You've been a Cleveland Browns fan for more than 60 years. We're going to play a little yay or nay. Yay or nay, the Cleveland Browns win a Super Bowl in the next 5 seasons?
Oh, absolutely yay.
Yay!
No doubt. No doubt. And my only hesitation in answering that question is that you said they'll win a Super Bowl.
Ooh, you're thinking more than
multiple.
One.
Multiple. Oh, okay.
I'll be shocked if it doesn't happen.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I do have to ask Ziggy, because as I was listening this morning, I thought, you know, I'm kind of thinking Rose might be right about all this stuff. And so I don't know how old Rose is relative to you, Ziggy, but
you're talking about
Doris Dad? The event at Sky Dome in 96 makes me wonder, you know, were you guys dating? I mean, is there a reason you remember it so clearly?
I had someone message me yesterday and said, hey, are you guys, you know, you're talking about the farewell of Rogers Center and Sky Dome, and said, how about the things that happened in 1990 and 96? And I was like, I don't know if we're going to bring that up on the radio. So,
oh, we brought
it up. That's your excuse. Okay.
Dad, this was great. Thanks so much for doing it. And
yeah, thanks for coming on.
I think it was a nice nice service to issue and offer some reminders of the heady days of the early days of the stadium. We appreciate it. And we'll certainly, well, I know I'll see you soon. And we'll catch up again.
All righty, man. Thanks.
Jamie MacArthur, and my dad, the former CFO and later president of Sky Dome in the late 80s and early 90s, for a trip down memory lane. Shane Corson at the top of the hour. Ravens and Steelers rescheduled yet again, 3:40 tomorrow afternoon for the kickoff in Pittsburgh. Jonas Schaefer of the Baltimore Sun at 8:30 to discuss the mess, the COVID outbreak in Baltimore. And up next, friend of the show, former Maple Leaf and Movember spokesperson, Shane Corson joins us. Well, Ziggy, Robert in downtown has texted into 59590. I just saw this text now, so I'm assuming it's off the Cleveland Browns multiple Super Bowl victory prediction over the next 5 years. Mark this day, the 1st of December 2020, Scotty Mack's dad is on drugs. Drug use allegations. Maybe if we ever have him on again, we have to make him piss in a cup first and have it tested.
Well,
he thinks the Brownies are going to win multiple Super Bowls in the next 5 years.
I mean, winning one would be a good start for the Browns.
How about
is
making
that another
the
question?
How about making the playoffs?
Playoffs?
Maybe they're. I mean, the PEDs are going around the NFL right now.
Well, in right? Houston, absolutely. In Houston, without question. We'll get back into that, and then we'll get into the Ravens and Steelers. They've been pushed back again to 3:40 tomorrow afternoon. This is the state of things. Early December 2020, an NFL game is being played late on a Wednesday afternoon to accommodate the rights holder who has a commitment to broadcasting the lighting of a tree in New York City in the evening. That's where we're at, Zig. I mean, I don't know how much more 2020 you can get than that.
Do Americans do is that a big thing? Like, I don't remember.
We all do it. We all light trees. Most of us do it privately in our living rooms, but
yes, is it that big of a deal to broadcast that?
Well, they cut one of those big trees down in a forest somewhere and they haul it into the middle of New York City into Rockefeller Center and they wrap it up with lights and put a bunch of TV cameras on site and go, here, look, the lights are coming on. Have a happy holiday. The lights are on. That's it.
I don't know. Is it that big of a deal? I don't know. I could be wrong, but
well, it's not bigger than the Ravens and the Steelers, I can tell you that. But that's a conversation for 25 minutes from now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this guy's got the answers of when the NHL is finally going to get back to playing.
We need those.
Yeah. We talked to him a month ago at the start of November, and now it's December the 1st. Shane Corson, former Leaf and Movember spokesperson, is with us. Shane, it is exactly, and I'm dragging this out, 8:07 in the morning right now. Have you shaved that dirty caterpillar off the upper lip or not?
Not yet, Scotty Mac. I'm having pressure to keep it for a while. I'm not sure. It might keep me warm with this weather. I just looked outside and go, oh my God, maybe I'll keep it. Keep myself warm.
I think you look good. I pulled up your Twitter page and you're I know you've been posting along the way and you know I love seeing all the updates, but I think it looks good on you. I think you should keep it.
Thanks, Ziggy. Thanks. I got a text message from my daughter at Boston College. She said, "Get that thing off your face, Daddy." So I don't know. I'm getting pressure both ways, bud. But thank you. Thanks, Ziggy.
How creative are you going to get with this thing? Like I think you've got to do the big thick 80s style at some point. There's always room for a handlebar. I think the one thing, if we could just get past the strict mustache thing, Shane, you know those guys, and there are very few of them, so you may not know any of them. I certainly don't know them personally, who go sideburns about halfway down and then draw it back up and connect it with the mustache, but don't have any chin hair or any like beard. It's just kind of like a sideburn connected to the mustache thing. I think if you want to be brave, that's what you're going to do next year.
Not a chance, Scotty Mac. Not a chance. Maybe the handlebars. I've done the handlebars before. The problem is the lower part of my handlebars are getting really gray, so you can't really see it. So that's why I didn't do it this year. I'm getting old, boys, but there's not a chance I'm doing the one you just talked about. No chance. Maybe the handlebars.
Father time is undefeated. For all of us. What is your, I mean, look, I mean, you got buddies around the NHL, Shane, former player, you talk to people. What is, Ziggy's been pretty clear on his stance on where things are with the NHL. Where do you think we sit here on the morning of December 1st? This is a crucial time. They got to get a deal done here to have a season. Where do you think we are, NHL, NHLPA, and how confident are you that we could have some actual hockey by, say, mid-January at the latest.
So, I mean, Ziggy's probably more connected, and you are more connected to more people in the league, and people are making decisions, but I feel pretty confident we'll get something done. I think mid-January we'll start the season, hopefully. I mean, we need hockey. It's important for everybody. It gives us something to do. I'm going crazy right now. I've watched, I think, every show on Netflix right now, and with no hockey and no Blue Jays, it's been tough. But, I mean, my son's got some friends that are playing the league right now, and they're all wanting to play. I know the players want to play, and hopefully them and the league can get together and get something in line that works for both sides, and they can start the season in January.
How active were you with, contract negotiations? Were you like the guy that always went to the PA meetings and, you know, and were involved? Because some guys were involved a lot, and then some guys you'd never see them at a meeting. They would never talk about it. They wouldn't even vote on anything. Where were you when you played?
I mean, I didn't get like crazy involved. I tried to keep myself updated with our, you know, we all voted and had a guy on our team that was, you know, the main guy that was doing all the meetings and stuff like that. And then he'd come back to us and report to us. Contracts, I never got involved. I let my agent do that. I mean, that's what I paid him to do. And with the PA stuff, we voted. Each team would have a guy that would do that. You know that, Ziggy. So, I mean, I'd leave it up to him. I had confidence in him. I'd let him do the negotiating and the talking, and then he'd come back and report to us, and then we'd make our decision from there. So I didn't get crazily involved, but I tried to keep myself updated, and so I knew what I was voting on and understood what I was voting on, because it wasn't just about us, too, Ziggy. You knew when we were going through different things that we went through over our career, we were thinking about, you know, the future too, for the guys in the future, and making sure they were taken care of, and you know, hopefully those guys do that for the ex players too moving forward. So it's something that was important for us. We wanted to set a standard and make sure that we were taking care of the guys that were going to follow us after us. So that was important to us too. Mm.
Yeah, and the reason I'm asking, I'm just wondering, like, if this drags on a little bit more, I'm wondering if the bigger names in the game will have to come up. I mean, I was with Crosby in Pittsburgh, and he didn't really, you know, anything CBA related or any kind of issue that came up, you would never usually hear from him. He wouldn't really be that vocal. I'm just wondering if this is going to be a time where we're going to need guys like him, like McDavid, like Matthews, like Ovechkin, some of the, you know, the prominent names to kind of come forward and say, okay, guys, like, we're going to have to make some concessions that, you know, should have been handled in the July this year, but, you know, it's up to, is it going to be up to these, you know, the prominent players in the league to maybe push this thing over the line if it does drag on?
I think so. I don't know Crosby that well, but it seems that he's pretty quiet. Doesn't say too much. Doesn't rock the boat either way. I mean, he's a great hockey player and he's a great kid from what I understand, but he is pretty quiet on that. I know when I played, I mean, I got the opportunity to play with some pretty good players, and when it came to the point where they needed to put their foot down or get involved a little bit more, they did. And I think it's going to have to take something like that. I mean, I hate to say it, but those guys, they're not going to get hurt as much if there's not a season as the guys that are lower on the totem pole. I mean, so I think these leaders and the great players in our league have to stand up and, you know, at some point and be a little bit more vocal and get more involved.
Shane Corson is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We're going to bounce around on a couple of different topics with you, Shane. And these are scenarios that you weren't necessarily there for, but you certainly knew the people involved. Tomorrow, if you can believe it, December the 2nd marks the 25th anniversary of the Patrick Waugh game in Montreal, where he got shelled against the Red Wings, went to the bench, had the stare down with Mario Tremblay, and very famously went to the end of the bench where Habs team president Ronald Corey was sitting and whispered something in Corey's ear, and it wasn't sweet nothings, right? It was...
Wasn't anything about his Stanley Cup, I'll tell you that.
No, it had something to do with, I ain't ever playing another game in this jersey. Now, you were a St. Louis Blue at that time, but you were Patrick's teammate for a number of years prior during your time in Montreal. Give us the context. I mean, Habs fans live in Toronto, and those of a certain age can explain the importance of Patrick Waugh to the Montreal Canadiens and to their fan base. But younger people or people not as connected to the Habs, may have an understanding of it, but not just the clear depth of it. What did Patrick Waugh in your time in Montreal mean to that city and that province?
Oh, gosh. I mean, no disrespect to any other great goalies that played in the NHL and are playing in the NHL right now. And I got the opportunity to play with Cujo and Balfour, and Marty Brodeur was on our team in the Olympics. But for me, Patrick Waugh is the greatest goalie to play the game. I mean, he played his best games when he was needed the most and in the playoffs, and just was an incredible, you know, playoff goaltender. And the city of Montreal loved him. The province of Quebec loved him. He was a French-speaking superstar, and they craved for those players. I mean, they were great to us English guys too, but I mean, he was a hero there in Montreal, and he deserved every bit of it. He was a great player. I was an intense guy and loved to win. He was one of the hardest working guys I played with in practice. So for that to go down that way, I mean, I came back to Montreal actually after that had happened and he had left. And I don't think the Canes were the same for a while after he left, obviously. It's been a bit of a tough road for them since he left. And he was just a great leader in the room, too. He was one of the most, like I said, the most intense players. And he was a vocal goalie, probably the most vocal I ever played with. He, you know, tell you you were playing great in the room, whereas most goalies, and if you were playing bad, he'd let you know, too. He wasn't afraid to do that, whereas most goalies are pretty quiet and keep to themselves. But he was a hero in that city and that province, and he meant so much to that organization. And it was just unfortunate that it happened. I mean, like I said, I came back and played there in Montreal after he was gone and played for Mario, and Mario Tremblay was there. Yvon Cornoyer and Stevie Schott were the assistant coaches at that time. And just unfortunate happened. I mean, Mario's a very intense person, too, and I could see it happening, actually, between those two because they're both super intense. And the funny thing is they've known each other for a long time. They played together, so... it was just sad to see it happen that way. And, I mean, I would have thought when I left there, that Patrick would have, you know, played his whole career in Montreal and stayed there. And deep down in my heart, I wish that would have happened, but he obviously went on to Colorado and had some great success in Colorado too. So, yeah, it was just an unfortunate situation and it was tough to watch. I watched it and over again, and it's just, it was kind of sad.
Shane Corson with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So you mentioned your daughter earlier about your, you know, Movember, but you tweeted out her highlight reel that was on almost every single station. The first thing so she's a senior, right? Fourth year at Boston College. When yep. I saw the play, I was like, that's more air than you got on all of your sauce passes combined in your career. How does it feel when you're watching the highlights of your daughter that she's got probably better hands and more skill than you?
Did she get mom's athleticism? That's got to be it, right?
I don't know where she got that from, boys. I couldn't even raise the puck. You've seen my shot before, buddy. We play together in the charity events. I can't even get the puck off the ice. A few of the boys actually sent me a message. They said, "Course, you couldn't even raise the puck when you shot it." I think it was Old Dog sent me a message right away. He goes, "Oh my God, what a sauce!" But yeah, definitely not me, boys. It was quite a pass, so I was pretty proud of her. But I'm just proud that she's down there getting a great education and. You know, unfortunately, with everything going on with COVID, it's not going to be the same type of senior year she was looking forward to. But they're playing right now, and she's having fun and enjoying it. And like I said, she's going to get a great education. But yeah, it's I got quite a few jabs over the last week about that. That most of my goals were from about 5 feet away from the net, boys. So I didn't have to raise the puck too much.
Off the skate?
off the skate, off the puck, yeah, off the head. I take them any way I can get them. But Ziggy's seen it when we play our charity events. He's seen it. I can't raise the puck, and I couldn't even back then.
Shane, you played, I mean, and I might miss some names here, but you played for Jean Perron. And yep. I would imagine that was an experience as you're breaking into the NHL. You played for Pat Burns in yep. Montreal. You played for Mike Keenan in yep. St. Louis. You played for Pat Quinn in yep. Toronto. I'm like, you probably got a million stories. So asking you to pick your favorite or your best one that also happens to be radio friendly may be tough when putting you on the spot. But when you look back at those guys, what stands out to you?
They all helped me. They're all part of my career in the NHL, and I owe a lot to all of them. I mean, they all played a part of it. Jean Perron was, my rookie year, and they had just won the Stanley Cup, and he gave him the opportunity, him along with Serge Savard, gave him the opportunity to play in the league the year after they had won the Cup, and, to be able to come into that situation and make the team and get the opportunity to play was pretty fortunate, but, they gave me that opportunity. So I owe a lot to him, and, Pat Quinn just, he's a legend around the league, and so much respect for Pat Quinn. He's such a great man, and, helped me a lot. Gave me the opportunity to play here in Toronto with the team that I grew up watching and loving. And, Mike Keenan, I know a lot of people don't like him or didn't like playing for him, I should say, and a lot of people loved him. It was a love-hate relationship with Mike, and he was super good to me, played the whatever you out of me. I don't want to say the word on radio, but he played me a ton and was super good to me. I mean, he was hard on some other guys, and that was Mike. And but I loved playing for him. He was the type of coach that I could play for, and I could accept the way he was. And luckily, I was one of the guys he liked, so he played me a lot. Pat Burns, just another. He was like a father figure to me. He helped me through when my dad was sick with cancer, and wrote a letter to my dad, was just an incredible person, was like a family member to me. And like I say, he was like a father to me, a second father to me. And he just treated me like gold and gave me every opportunity to be successful in the league and played me a ton and just was a super person. But for me, that's the hockey side, but away from hockey, they're all good people. I mean, Mikey even Mike Keenan was just a super person. And I remember playing the Canada Cup for him in 91. He wanted all the family, like a lot of teams would tell him to keep the families away, not him. He wanted the families to be a part of it. And I thought that was amazing. And same with Pat Quinn and Pat Burns and Jean Perron. They were all great people away from the rink and good people, good human beings. And they treated us like men and treated us like human beings before hockey players. That's something that, I was lucky to have. I mean, I had Teddy Green in Edmonton, who was just another great person. And he used to, blame himself for our losses more than us. And that was his downfall. He just took all the blame himself instead of telling us to look at ourselves in the mirror and take the blame, because it was us who was playing the games on the ice. So I was lucky enough. And Glenn Sather came in and coached me for a few months. He was incredible. So I was lucky to have some great coaches, hockey wise, but great people, off the ice, and treated us, like I said, like human beings. It was incredible. So I was lucky to have some unbelievable coaches and stories. I mean, like, yeah, there are a lot of them can't be spoken about on the radio, but the funniest one that I, one of the ones I'll never forget is you were talking about Patrick Waugh having the fight with Mario Tremblay, and then walking by Mr. Corey, Ronald Corey, because all the brass used to sit right behind our bench. There was no glass back then, and that day at the Forum. That's how old I am. So, I mean, I remember coming off the ice, I slammed the gate. Pat, I was playing for Pat Burns. I slammed the gate, and he came down and whispered in the mirror. He goes, "You do that again, and you're gone." And sure enough, about three or four shifts later, Stefan Reich and I were playing together. We weren't having a very good game. He pulled us off again. I come off, and I slammed the gate. That was kind of our signal to the coach we weren't happy, right, Ziggy? You remember those days, so.
Mm-hmm.
Came off, I slammed the gate again to let him know I wasn't happy, and sure enough, he comes flying down and he grabs me by the back of the jersey and gives me a little tug and starts yelling at me, and I fall right off the back of the bench on my back. I'm laying on the back of the ground on the floor on my back, and I'm going, "Oh my God, what's going on?" And I can see Pat staring at me, leaning over me, staring at, down at me, looking at me with that red bright face, and his ears are red. His ears used to go red when he got mad. He goes, "Go to the room and get undressed." So I had to do the walk of shame by the whole Brass, Mr. Corey and Beliveau and all the greats, Rocket and all them were behind the bench, and go into the room and start undressing. And I go in the back, there's a hallway behind the Forum. I go back there, I'm sitting there and I'm half undressed, and the period ends, and Larry Robbins comes back in and says, "Go in the room and get dressed." So I see him leave me, walks down the hall, goes into Pat's room, and comes back out, and I'm in the room starting to get dressed, and Burns comes in and says, "Get ready. Are you ready to play?" And he didn't say him in that exact words, but Larry saved me that game. I got to go back out and play the third period. Pat played the crap out of me, and was all good. But, yeah, it was pretty crazy times with Burns. We had our battles. That's what I meant. We were like father and son, but we had our battles, but he always had my back when it came down to it. So it was an awesome time playing for him.
The website is Movember.com, on Twitter at MovemberCA, on Facebook at Movember Canada. And tell us about your Instagram account, at Shane, and Shane, just remind everybody, has a Y.
At Shane Corson 27.
At Shane Corson 27, Shane with a Y.
Yeah, Shane
posting?
With a Y. My mom threw a Y in there, brother. I don't know why she did that, but actually Shane came from a cowboy movie in a oh. book that was written, so I might have fit in a Ziggy back in the cowboy days, I think.
Hell yeah, for sure.
Hey, cowboy boots, you know, a little bit of whiskey and having some fun. But, you know, I'm pretty active nowadays, boys, on Instagram. I haven't been on Instagram. I started an Instagram account, and then I was on it for like probably a month and a half, and I kind of went cold for a long time. I didn't really understand how big the social media was. Until actually this all happened with the pandemic. It's but I'm enjoying it, having fun, and I'll be posting lots of different things over the time, just telling my story and trying to use my platform to help people, to be honest with you. I think that's something we were lucky enough to play a game we love to play, and we made good money at it, and to be able to use our platform to help with like things like Movember and mental health and cancer. I try to do what I can to help people, and if you can help one person, I think it's well worth it. I mean, I suffered when my dad was sick and passed away, and it's a struggle every day. I miss him every day. So if we can save one life from suicide or cancer, which Movember helps with, it's well worth it, boys.
Good man. At Shane Corson 27 on Instagram, and Shane has a Y in it. Remember that. Hockey's coming back soon. Fingers are crossed. We're counting on it. We'll have you on a lot. And we'll leave you with this, Shane.
Go Leafs, go.
There you go. Go Leafs, go. Remember, everything you say on this program lives forever. We'll talk soon, pal.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you guys.
You bet. Shane Corson.
Thanks.
Former Leaf. Jonas Schaefer from the Baltimore Sun. We think the Ravens and Steelers are going to play tomorrow afternoon. How deep does this COVID outbreak go in Baltimore, and how much of a mess has this made of the Ravens' season? We'll discuss with Jonas coming up. I know what you're doing tomorrow night. You're going to be watching that tree lighting ceremony in Rockefeller Center.
Can't wait.
We expect a full report.
I will.
On Thursday.
Want one?
On Thursday morning, we'll need a full report. Did the lights go on?
That's all you got for me?
It would just be so 2020 if the breakers short-circuited or something and the tree lighting ceremony didn't go off. I mean, that would be the coup de grace, right? That would be the cherry on top of the poop sundae that has been 2020. And because of the Rockefeller Center tree lighting ceremony, the fourth or fifth rescheduling, it might be the 20th, it could be the third for all I know, rescheduling of the Steelers-Ravens game, which was to have been played in Pittsburgh on U.S. Thanksgiving Thursday night, is tomorrow now at 3:40 Eastern time in the afternoon. The Ravens are experiencing a COVID outbreak. The Pittsburgh Steelers have had a positive test or two. To discuss all of this, Jonas Schaefer of the Baltimore Sun is with us this morning. Jonas, we appreciate your time. How are the Ravens as a team feeling about all of this right now, when one considers just the number of positive tests that they have had and the lack of practice time the team has had over the last week and a half or so?
Yeah, they're not happy about it. Thanks for having me, guys. Having me on, guys. Appreciate it. You know, there is concern just about everything. There's grumbling and unhappiness about how the Ravens themselves have let this situation kind of come to a head. There's, I think, some unhappiness about how the NFL last week, you know, allowed the Ravens to go back in the building on Monday and Tuesday, even as this potential outbreak was happening. There's, you know, worry about just not having enough practice time. And then there's just the uncertainty of, you know, are we really past this? Is this truly contained? Because we just all saw in these past 9 days what, you know, kind of moving too soon could do to a team, could do to a schedule, could do to the NFL. So there's just a lot of, you know, grief about what's happened since last Monday. But these guys are also aware of the fact that, hey, you can't just bail. It'll probably cost you a game check. And, you know, they're not quitters. They want to play. They feel like they can hang with Pittsburgh. So it's just a whole lot of emotions coming up on this game, you know, thrice postponed now. And it's just a matter of, you know, how everything will affect them. Will it bring them together? Will that even matter with how many guys they're missing? I guess there's only kind of one way to find out right now.
There's a lot of stories being thrown around on the internet on exactly what has happened in the Ravens locker room. Do you know exactly what the issue was and how the COVID spread exactly started to spread and, you know, infiltrate the room and what the issues were in the locker room?
Yeah, I mean, I've been asked that a lot. It's tough to say. I was just kind of joking with someone yesterday. It's not like, you know, there's not like a blood spatter analysis with like there, you know, would be with the murder scene. I mean, this is an invisible virus, so you can't really tell exactly how it got in. There's obviously certain candidates. The Ravens have disciplined their strength and conditioning coach, Steve Saunders. We had heard through sources that he had, you know, been hiding symptoms, have been working out with players, sometimes while not wearing a mask. Someone told me that he just completely disregarded the variant proximity tracker, which, of course, you know, makes contact tracing easier for the NFL to complete. But, you know, there's also a possibility that this is just a big team and that sometimes you don't catch the virus right as it's contagious because of how, you know, variable this incubation period is, as we've seen for the past 9 days. So, I mean, obviously there's going to be a lot of fingers pointed at, you know, Steve Saunders and his possibility that he does have to take a large amount of blame. But it's just so hard to tell, you know, with how many kind of ways this thing can get in, just how it might have spread. You know, obviously the Ravens and the NFL probably didn't do the smartest thing by letting these guys in back into the building after Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins had tested positive. But, you know, they were preparing on a short week. So it's just a very tough situation all around. But I'm sure the Ravens will you know, get pretty punished heavily because of it.
Jonas Schaefer of the Baltimore Sun is our guest. We're going to attempt to reconnect with him. It seems like one of those weird things with the cell phones. You can hear what they're saying, but it's a little scratchy.
Yeah, it's tough on my end over here hearing him. Yeah, and I've heard a couple different stories on what happened in the locker room, and obviously most of them are connecting back to the strength.
Well,
coach.
What happened?
And he just wasn't wearing a mask.
If you remember, on Sunday, Jay Glazer, who's as plugged in a person as there is, insider for the NFL on Fox, said it started with the strength and conditioning coach was kind of loose about the mask wearing and it spread to the team chaplain and the team nutritionist. And of course the nutritionist is serving meals to the players and all of that. Right. So that tends to be the sense right now of how it all began. And we have Jonas Schaefer back on the phone from the Baltimore Sun. One of the infected players is I would say inarguably the most important player on the Baltimore Ravens. And that is the quarterback Lamar Jackson. Jonas, you know, you can touch on the COVID part if you want, but I'm looking for the broader assessment. What is the feeling about the way Lamar has played this year and the general state of the Ravens offense?
It's definitely not what it was at this point last year. You know, the Ravens last year were a juggernaut. They finished, if you are just talking about efficiency, they were the number one rushing offense and they were the number one passing offense. I know they weren't a team that threw a lot, of course, but when they did, they were extremely effective. This year, it's not the case. Their running game is not top 10, which is, kind of incredible just to consider. You have someone as dynamic a runner as Lamar Jackson, and then their passing game, probably in large part because of the fall off, is nowhere near as good as it was last year. I think it's in the bottom 10 at this point. So, you know, he has done things that have not helped this offense. He's really struggled as a downfield passer. He's not been as accurate as he hoped to be on a sideline throw, but they are also a pretty decimated blocking unit. You know, they lost potential Hall of Famer right guard Marshall Yanda to retirement this offseason. Left tackle Ronnie Stanley suffered a season-ending ankle injury in that first meeting against Pittsburgh week 8. Nick Boyle, who's just a tremendous kind of inline blocking tight end, is lost for the season with a knee injury. And they've just had to play musical chairs up front. And that their wide receivers are probably still, you know, the worst in the NFL. It didn't really matter last year because they got such great looks against zone coverage with, you know, really advantageous down and distance situations. But they just haven't had someone step up besides Mark Andrews in that receiving corps to become a kind of bona fide number one. So it's just a situation where, you know, like with COVID, honestly, there is no, you know, real clear problem area for this team. It's just, you know, an accumulation of things, and it just snowballed and snowballed until we're here where we're wondering just how, you know, bad this offense can be. And right now it's pretty bad.
There's a lot of people out there saying right now that, you know, the rules are different for different teams, right? This game's being moved for the Ravens, obviously. You know, big pieces are out with COVID, and then Lamar may have been in contact with it. He's got COVID. And then you look to the Denver New Orleans game on Sunday, the Broncos right. didn't have a quarterback. Do you believe that the rules are different for different teams?
I don't think so, because I think that would just be too big an issue, and for the NFL to, you know, have that erosion of trust could just be a devastating issue. I wrote about this, I guess yesterday. The time has been kind of a weird issue for me. But, you know, with Denver, it was a situation where, look, the NFL, you know, if you believe it's league officials, is only concerned at this point about health and safety. And so with Denver, they knew about the positive test with Jeff Driscoll, and they felt that the quarterback situation had been contained by, you know, quarantining all those guys, by silencing them as close contacts. So even though there was a matter of competitive fairness with, you know, no quarterbacks on the roster being allowed to play, the NFL was willing to stomach that because in their minds, you know, health and safety was being taken care of. And it didn't matter that the biggest position on the field was going to be compromised. With the Ravens, there was this matter of, is this outbreak still contained? Because, you know, the further that they got along the process, the more that they thought that they would have this under wraps. And I could understand, though, with this latest postponement, you know, Pittsburgh fans being a little, you know, miffed about why this was still going on, because there was only one positive test yesterday, and it was from someone who wasn't even in contact with the team. But, you know, my kind of conspiracy theory was that maybe the NFL feels like, you know, they were partly to blame for all of this by letting the guys back in the facility, you know, on Monday and Tuesday, and potentially giving this another vector to spread. So, you know, there's also just the factor that, hey, these guys have not practiced like, you know, a team normally does, which could obviously contribute to some possible conditioning problems, some possible situations where these guys just aren't in shape, and that also leaves them vulnerable to health and safety issues. So it's tough to say, but obviously the NFL, you know, wants to keep up this veneer of health and safety, and for them postponing this 3 times, you know, lets them do that.
With Jonas Schaefer of the Baltimore Sun, if you were a betting man, Jonas, does this game happen at 3:40 tomorrow afternoon?
I think so. I think, you know, they probably would have been fine playing it Tuesday, but there was a lot of unhappiness about on the Ravens side about that issue. I know that there were some Ravens on this team who wanted to play Thursday, and it wouldn't have been too much of an ask or too much of an imposition on them, I think, because they would have gone from playing you know, Thursday to Monday, which is the usual, you know, which have been, you know, not entirely difficult with the short week. But I think as of right now, it seems like everyone is, you know, resigned to the idea that it's going to be a Wednesday game. So, you know, I know I'm, you know, it's not a safe bet at this point after everything that's happened, but I feel like it's probably the safest bet of everything that's happened so far.
You're a good man for doing this morning. We appreciate your time, Jonas, and we'll certainly reach out again.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Jonas Schaefer of the Baltimore Sun, and you can get him on Twitter at Jonas, J-O-N-A-S, underscore Schaefer, S-H-A-F-F-E-R. He is on the Ravens beat for the Baltimore Sun. You should follow him, Ziggy, as a now licensed member of hashtag Ravens Flock. You'll get Jonas's reports, and you can bring them to
follow him, actually.
Our program. And I don't know, maybe if you DM him, he'll send you a car flag north or something like that, and you can fly that Ravens head on the back window of your 1996 something or other.
The Ravens are not in a playoff position right now. Did you know that?
Correct them all. And they are
a little surprised.
They are a game and a half behind the Cleveland Browns. The Brownies are 8-3. The Ravens are 6-4.
What odds would I have had to give you at the start of the year if I said week 12, the Ravens would be out of the playoff position?
I would have called you nuts.
What kind of odds?
I would have.
100-1? What would you have taken? What bet? 1,000? 1,000? If I would have said 1,000-1.
Dude, I am not betting you $1,000.
I'm just saying, 1,000-1, like, what would the odds have to be for you to, would have been like, yeah, that's legit. You'd have to bet, like, I wouldn't even take 1,000,000-1. The Ravens not in a playoff position in week 12.
The thing is that weird stuff can happen, right? You can have a rash of injuries. You can have a season go sideways as a result of that. I mean, that, on paper bets before week one are always dangerous to make.
Yeah, the injuries, okay. They've been injured a little bit, some key pieces out. Now, besides for this last week with COVID, I don't know. I think it was ugly. I think it was an ugly season right now.
You want to know what else was ugly, Ziggy? I missed our Jiffy qualifier an hour ago. So I'm going to pump this name out. And I want you listening to this entire read. Okay. We're cleaning out our prize closet with the help of Jiffy, and we've made mystery boxes which contain signed jerseys and more for you to win. To enter, you need to be listening to Good Show, Writer's Block, and Tim and Sid every weekday to collect keywords. And then you text those keywords to 590-590, and you include your first name, your last name, and your city. And then you tune in every morning, about an hour ago, 7:45-ish, for your chance to qualify. So we're about to tell you who we drew from all of the entries we got yesterday. And if it's you, please call us back within 590 seconds to immediately win $100 to spend at Jiffy and to qualify for this week's mystery box, which we will open and then announce the winner for Monday at 7:30. Here is the name we have drawn, Ziggy. Doris Humber from Brampton. Doris Humber from Brampton. Your 590 seconds to call starts now. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, your star 590 on your cell. If you didn't qualify, didn't hear your name, stay tuned for the next keyword during Good Show after 9 a.m., and you can check out sportsnet.ca/590 for contest details. I'm just happy it wasn't a Doris in Scarborough, because then I would have wondered if it was an inside job.
I'm happy we got that in.
You're happy.
Thank you for remembering.
We got that one in. Happy we got that one in. We'll get Hugh into studio next. Ziggy, an in-text apology from my dad for calling Doris Rose by accident. So we got clarification on that.
Maybe Rose is her middle name. Doris Rose.
Or maybe.
Either that or Ziggy's pissed off somebody else.
Or maybe Doris has a sister named Rose. We could start extending the family tree here.
Her sister does live next door to her on the other side. Did you know that?
No.
Are you kidding?
Her sister.
Well, there we go. Rose. That's it. Doris has a sister named Rose.
Doris's sister lives on the other side of her.
The text line is wondering if the conspiracy for our Jiffy qualifier, Doris from Brampton, Doris. So kid gloves with Hugh tomorrow, because it's 25 years since Patrick Waugh said, I'm not playing for the Habs anymore.
Yeah.
Just an emotional day for you tomorrow.
What a great day that was.
I loved it.
Maybe the worst day of my life.
We'll talk about this tomorrow. I think an interesting element of that eventual trade later in the week to Colorado, or later the following week to Colorado, is that was the Avalanche's first year in Denver. Had that situation happened a year prior with Patrick Waugh in Montreal, he would have been traded somewhere else, because there is no way,
no,
socially or politically, that the Montreal Canadiens would have been able to trade Patrick Waugh to the Quebec Nordique. It just would not have happened.
I got a lot of pent-up anger about that day that I'm going to unleash tomorrow.
Why you have to be mad?
And we got 3 weeks to Festivus, Hugh. So if you want to hold some of that anger, I got a lot of problems with you people.
Off my chest!
So we'll relive that day 25 years ago tomorrow. The Patrick Waugh, Mario Tremblay situation in that Habs-Red Wings game on a Saturday night at the Old Forum. Again, we're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Enjoy your snowy Tuesday. Good show's next.
Hey, Scotty. How you been, sport? If you weren't